Mr. Henderson, Reel 3. What uniform were you issued with?
Battle dress. Khaki battle dress. We got two battle dress suits. They looked at us and said, you want a 5 or you want a size 7. Well, I knew what size I wanted from previous days in the Home Guard. So when he said I wanted a 5, I knew I wanted a 4. So I got one pair of 4s and one pair of 7, because the 7s were longer than the 4s, and you got a better turnover on your gaiters. I knew it all by then. So we got two suits, two pair of boots, one for best, which you didn't wear except for ceremonials. Spent most of your evenings polishing them. One pair of gaiters, belt, webbing with the brass buckles. It was brass, and you had them all to polish, and you hadn't let any polish go onto the webbing. It was difficult.
So how were we able to do that?
You had pieces of cigarette packets underneath, so it avoided taking, and then you used to have to take your belt off so the officers could look behind your belt underneath. It all had to be the same. You've got two shirts, one vest, two drawers cellular. You only got one vest to join up, and you never got another one all the time you were in. That was your PT, one vest PT. We never got any more. We never got any sheets or pillows or pillowcases. You just got your four blankets in the winter and 3 in the summer. Mess tins, knife, fork and spoon, a cup, a mug, a brown mug. Brown, you know, tin mug.
Metal.
It was metal, but it was covered in sort of a brown thing. Hairbrush, braces. No elastic in. There was wide army braces. I think the same braces they used in the Boer War. That they've always used. Braces. One pair of PT slippers, which, like sand shoes, gym shoes. But we never got another pair of those issued. I tried, but you couldn't get, once they were worn out, you never got any more. You had quite towels, of course.
Get a housewife?
And a housewife. The housewife was a little thing with needles and socks and wool for darning your socks. Oh, and I think you got 3 pair of grey good socks. I wish you could buy them today. They were quite good socks. Hard wearing and warm. They were very, very good.
And the equipment they got, to have a sats and so forth, what did you get there?
You got a large pack, or it was called a big pack, your small pack. Your small pack had a towel, mess tins, it just, two mess tins just fitted in, mess tins, towel, and your washing equipment, things like that. And that was what it was for. When you went away anywhere on overnight stay, you took your small pack with your basic things in. Your washing materials, your razor and things like that.
And of course you'd keep this webbing material clean. What did you use for that?
Blanco. Khaki Blanco. Your big pack, no one ever said anything to us about big packs. It was the first big pack I'd ever had. We just Blancoed it. And in the green, dark green Blanco, the same as your gaiters and the same as your belt. You had to buy that out of your meagre. We only got 10 and 6 a week. It was 1 and 6 a day. Well, of course, we had to make an allowance of 7 shillings to your parent. So you were left with 3 and 6. 3 shillings and 6 pence. And out of that, you had to buy your Blanco. And if you wanted any supper at night, there was no supper issued by the army as such. You had to go to the Naffy and buy a cup of tea and a bun. A cup of tea was about a penny, and a bun was about a penny. But if you didn't have any money, the army didn't leave you to starve, because they used to put some unsweetened cocoa in a bucket, and any dry bread that was left from tea time, that was there. So you couldn't starve. It wasn't good, but it was there if you had nothing else, if you were hungry. You had no money. And of course you had to buy boot polish and things like that, and you got your boot brushes. And you had to buy razor blades and, of course, hair oil. So you didn't have a lot to spend. You had nothing to spend, really. I remember one case we went out and we met the girls from Annan that worked in the munitions factories, and they knew that we didn't have any money. And when if we went in the pub at night, they always bought our beer, and we felt terrible, but this, that was at Annan in Scotland, and they were very, very good. Yes.
Rifle and bayonet, again?
We got a rifle that was a short Lee Enfield, and the large, the long bayonet, the same as we'd had, the same bayonet we'd had in the Home Guard. And we did have a rifle drill, but we'll come to that later, drill, and that's about it. Your rifle was had to be kept cleaned at all times. They were all numbered, and you had to remember your army rifle number. God help you if it was dirty. You took the bolt, opened the bolt, and he looked down, and you put your thumbnail, you wet it, and put your thumbnail inside the breech, and he looked down, and you could see the light shining off your wet thumbnail. And that was all right. If there's any dust in or spiders crawling about, your feet didn't touch, you were straight in the guard room. And the hat was a small to and fro hat again, back to front. And the regiment wasn't the border regiment, it was called the General Service Corps. And it was a large badge, something like the RSM's thing. You know, the RSM, the coat of arms kind of thing on the Royal Coach, that was like the badge. General Service Corps.
Which to get you through your basic training.
To get you through your basic training. Of course, from there, it was general service. From there, you went to any regiment they sent you to.
Full inspections, which you would obviously get. How often did you get a full inspection of all your equipment laid out in the prescribed manner?
Just one, I think, in that 6 weeks. We were too busy doing other things. We had so much to learn in that 6 weeks. They didn't waste time with kit inspections. I think we had one before we left, to make sure that we were equipped to move to our next port of call. But we had all sorts of medicals to do, and teeth to do, chiropodists, trick cyclists, all sorts, everything. You were running about, and then you came in and it would give you 5 minutes to get changed from PT into your best battle dress. And then from best battle dress, you had denims as well, which we did all our training in denims to save your battle dress. Well, your denims were washed every week and you never got the same one back. You put your denims in and you might get a different, so you were passing them, changing them about yourself in the room to get one that would fit you. But even when you went into action, we thought that we'd be going in battle dress, seeing first World War films, but we always went in action with denims on, overalls. But I think we only had the one kit inspection.
Medicals, you say, you obviously got your injections and body checks.
Yes.
Did you have to see what you call a trick cyclist, a psychiatrist?
I didn't have. But they threatened us with it if we didn't behave. I'm not sure whether this chap that wouldn't wash ever had to see one, because he was, I don't know what happened to him, but he was a... He just didn't fit in somehow. You know, he was from Durham, from Consett. And being a Durham man myself, I felt a bit ashamed that one of my countrymen should let the side down.
What was the group like that you had in your hut?
My group was very good. There was one chap called Robson from Stockton, and another lad called George Brewis from Berwick-on-Tweed. And I met both of them after the war, so we all survived. And I was when I came out of the army, I went on to long distance lorries, and I was in Berwick one night, and sorry, not Berwick, Annick, and I asked where George Brewis lived, and she said he lives at the top of the street in Black's Buildings. So I went knocking at the door, and of course we had a few pints in the pub, the corner. And the other one, Robson, I met him on a building site. He didn't recognise me, and I was delivering a load of bricks to the building site, and I said, come and have a cup of tea, it was break time, and I said, I'm a bit of a seance, you know, I can see things. And he said, how do you mean? Well, I said, you, for instance, your name begins with a S, Stoddart. He said, that's right. And I said, you were in the army. And your regiment began with an S. He said, yes, I was in the signals. And I said, you came from Stockton. He said, that's right. And I said, you have a tattoo on your arm. He said, yes. And it was a cross, because we all went together. I said, it was a cross with your mother's and him. He said, that's right. And they couldn't get over how I knew all these. And then I told him who I was, and it was quite an experience. But I never saw them again, just that once. That was quite a long time ago now, you know.
And you're saying that there was no bullying?
There was no bullying at all. The sergeant had a little room at the bottom of the hut. There was a room sort of added on. It was segregated from us. And he would open the door in the morning and wake us all up. That was Rivali, you know, and walk up and down to see everything was all. He looked after us. We were his flock. And he really did look after it. There was no bullying or anything. I'm surprised, looking back, how nice he was. You know, Sergeant Payne. Well, I wouldn't have remembered his name if I hadn't have liked him, I don't think.
The NCOs that you mainly had to put up with were your training ones, your instructors. You didn't come across officers, did you, a lot in your
no.
first 6 weeks?
Officers didn't have a lot to say. They would come along on inspectors when we were on parade occasionally, and we had church parades on Sundays. We had to be inspected by the sergeant and then the officer, and we went to the Carlisle Cathedral for our Sunday church parade, which was very interesting. But if there was anything wrong with us, the officers didn't say anything. They would point to us, and the sergeant had to come and play hell with it, you know, put your hat on straight. The officers were too high and mighty, were like gods. But they were all very nice.
You didn't get to know any of the officers
at the time? Didn't get any. I could remember the sergeant's name, but I couldn't remember. We had a corporal as well, I can't remember his name, but the sergeant's name stuck, Sergeant Payne. The officers, I can't remember the name or faces. I can remember if he walked in here now, I'd know him, this little Sergeant Penn. He's one of those faces that sticks.
Can we look at a typical day in your training, starting from Rivali?
Well, the sergeant would get us up in the morning. I think it really must have been about 6 o'clock. And we had to be straight out, PT kit. We had no pyjamas or anything to sleep in. All we slept in was our shirts, our khaki shirts. They weren't buttoned right down the front like they are today. They were just had three buttons at the top, and they were a long shirt, longer at the back than the front, if you had a sort of a tail that was longer than the, and we slept in those. Well, we had to get up, whip that off, PT vest and PT shorts, which were navy blue, and socks and PT shoes, and off we'd go for a long run for about an hour every morning at 6:30, and we'd come back in, get changed, have a wash, always cold water. There was no hot water for washing and shaving. It was always cold, and then it was breakfast comprised of porridge, mostly unsweetened porridge. Sugar, that must remember at that time, was rationed, so it was quite substantial. And then we had bacon and probably mashed potatoes. Eggs, we only got one a week at that, because they were more or less rationed. I think we got one on a Sunday morning. But we had mashed potatoes fried and a piece of bacon. And bread and marge and a pint pot of tea. Quite substantial. For lunch, we'd probably have... We've got three good meals a day. It was quite good stuff. It wasn't always cooked well, but it was always substantial, you know. Some of the boys that were used to very, very good food and nicely couldn't eat it, but we'd always been used to rough food, and of course we washed it down. It was meat, and tea was like Welsh rabbit and stuff like that we had for tea. But lunch was meat and potatoes and veg. Tea would be apple, and that would be we got a lot of Welsh rabbit in the army.
Were you paraded to your meals, or did you just make your own way down?
You just made your own way to your meals. We never paraded, and there were ATS girls that served you. The first ATS girls we saw. And then you had to be back on parade again for after breakfast, and you'd probably do square bashing, which was drill, for perhaps an hour and a half. And then you would maybe have your 10 o'clock naffy break, and then maybe more drill, or it might be report for after naffy break in PT kit for the gymnasium. In the afternoon, after lunch, we might be taken into Carlisle to the dentists, and you have to queue in these dental surgeries. Some of you went, you didn't all go, some of you went. And then and you also had to, your medicals, probably more drill parades in the afternoon.
Did you drill to numbers in the beginning?
Oh yes, always, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Some found it hard. Home Guard, this is where the Home Guard training came in very, very well. We felt really that we were better than anybody. The Home Guard people were a little bit toppy nose at this time, because we knew it all. Yes.
Did weapon training come into it?
Yes. Arms drill, slope arms, port arms, trail arms, all that, to numbers, and marching up and down. And then we used to go shooting, which I loved. I used to love shooting. We started off shooting on the little range, you know, the 30 yard range, with 303s. I can't remember us going to a big range at Carlisle. I can't remember us going to a full 200-300 yard range. We might have done, but I can't remember that. And then after we'd done 6 weeks of square bashing, drill parading, inspections to see that you were fit to be a soldier, learn how to march, really, how to walk and hold yourself, and once you've got it, you never forget it. And then we were passed out in front of the colonel in the castle square, and then we were told where we were going. We lined up, we were told where we were going.
Before we come to that again, were you introduced to route marches?
Yes, we did. There were about 7 miles. 7 miles, I think, was about an average route march.
And what would you be carrying?
You'd carry your small pack and your rifle. Your small pack and your rifle.
What would be in your pack?
Your mess tin, your towel, your soap, your shaving gear, and the packs. Odd ones were inspected to see that you got everything in that should be there. It was laid out. This was what had to go in the small pack. And the occasional ones, open your small pack to make sure that you had not more or less than what you should have had. It wasn't heavy, and it fitted nicely on your back. I'm not sure whether you weren't supposed to have a spare pair of boots in that pack or not. It runs in my mind that you had to have a spare pair of boots. It just fitted into that small pack, if you packed it right.
Did you have rests at given time?
5 minutes every hour. Which, of course, you'd only have probably 1 5-minute break in the 7 mile. You would do it in 2 hours. And then you'd come back in. We did have a long range at that Carlisle. We did, I remember now. Because I remember we had to boil our rifles out. After shooting, you have to boil them out with boiling water. Otherwise, the sweat and you clean them and it's the sweat and the. But the rests were 5 minutes every hour.
And what about your feet? Were they inspected after a long march of this kind?
I think we were just asked if we were all right. Anybody got any complaints? And some of them had, of course. They had never been used to army boots. They got blisters. But.
Did anyone?
I don't think we're all inspected as such, you know.
Did anyone drop out from a march of that distance?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember anybody. They may have done, but I can't remember anyone dropping out.
Being at training, did you do that?
Yes.
I always
remember it was the dummies were up on the thing, and you had to attack the dummy in out on guard. Then you ran up to the next one, in out on guard. And I always remember this little Sergeant Payne shouting, "The bayonet." It's an ideal weapon, and he's describing the uses of the bayonet. And ideal for this, that and the other, and for low-flying aircraft. and you had to laugh, otherwise he wasn't very happy. And then when you did start to laugh, he told you to shut up. You know, there were comedians, these drill sergeants, but they were all right.
This would be late 1942, I think.
This was late 1942, yes.
Did you have gas precaution training at all at that
yes,
stage?
Yes, you had your gas chamber and your gas cape, of course. That was part of your equipment. That was like a waterproof cape that went over your head, and thank God we didn't have to use it. And a respirator, which we also got in the Home Guard, the respirator.
And was it a time drill?
Yeah, you had to go through. You had to go into the tank. You had to go into a little room, a little brick hut. I could describe it as a brick hut. You went into a little. It was set below the ground. It was a little walled entrance, and you went in, and it was full of gas. And you had to attend to the wants of nature before you went in, because of your nervous condition. I remember this, and that was also the same in the fire brigade when you were on your respirator drill for smoke and that, and fire escapes. Attend to the wants of nature was the first part of the drill. And then you went in and you stopped in for so many minutes, and then you came out the other side. And this was to give you faith in your respirator. And then we also had the drill for throwing grenades, and throwing live grenades, which was a little bit nerve-wracking in case anyone dropped one after they got the pin out. Because it's easy. When you're nervous, it's so easy. But I'd done this in the Home Guard. But as long as that clip was down, it wouldn't go off. You could hold it all day. As soon as you let go and the handle flew up, then you only had, depending, 4 or 7 seconds before it went off. You could adjust the times. But
were you introduced to a anti-tank weapon in these first early weeks?
I don't think so. I don't think we had the anti-tank, not for the basic training. I can't remember having the anti-tank. Well, the anti-tank, yes, we did. That was the boys' anti-tank rifle. And the sergeant, there was a big chap, a guardsman type, it wasn't Sergeant Payne, took us on this, and he fired it from the hip. He said, it'll hurt if you don't hold it right. It was like an ordinary rifle, only bigger. And it fired an anti-tank bullet, a large bullet that would pierce a certain amount of armour. And he said, you can fire it from the hip, and he demonstrated how you could open your legs wide and get a good and hold it hard in your hip and fire it from the hip. I never tried it. Yes, that we did that.
Mortars, was this too early to bring in mortars?
Well, I don't think we might have had the spigot mortar, but I can't remember. I would be getting mixed up with the Home Guard training. That spigot mortar, you had to sort of stretch out and open on a big coiled spring. It was a dreadful thing, but very, very accurate. They said you could hit a buttercup at 200 yards with a spigot mortar. But I don't think we ever fired one.
What did you do in the evenings when you were finished your drills and your training?
Well, if it was Friday night and there was the room was being cleaned, was being inspected on the next following morning, everybody booked in to clean the windows and clean all the dust and everything. If it was a big parade the following day, you had your kit told us to press, but we used to press them underneath the mattress, underneath the blanket. And put a little bit of soap down the crease to make you.
So you were lying on them during the night?
We were lying on them through the night, always. We would maybe go out to the pitches. You couldn't afford to go out. And at that time, at 18, I'd never had a drink of beer. My first taste of beer was at Carlisle when I was 18. And we were waiting to go to see Lilac Time in the theatre, me and the George Brewis from Annick. And he said, hey, we'll pop in this pub right opposite the theatre in Carlisle. It was a little pub. And we went in and had a half pint of beer, and I wasn't very impressed with it. And then we went to see Lilac Town, all Schubert's music, and it was marvellous.
Were there any gambling schools set up in the...
Never saw any gambling at all.
The army would frown on it, did they not?
It wasn't allowed.
They didn't have any secret ones.
You weren't allowed to gamble, and yet when I read the book, the memoirs of my second in command of the regiment, I lost £10, I lost £20. So the colonel and them were gambling all the time through Normandy. And yet if we'd been caught gambling, there was a law for the rich and a law for the poor, a law for them and a law for us. And we sent someone back to Reims for a load of champagne. They had quite a different war than we had, but there you are. They were officers and we weren't. And I believe in wars prior to this, I think the gap was wider still, I think.
Well, they're pretty lenient with you, obviously being new to the army. In
at
the
Carlisle, very lenient. I think as long as we were trying, if you were seen to be trying, I think that's what mattered. If you were a lazy soldier, that they wouldn't stand for that. As long as you were seen to be pulling your weight and trying and doing your hardest, then you got away with it, you know. And I think everybody did. Well, I know everybody did, you know, for the honour of the hut.
Your passing parade came along. Was that with a band playing?
Yes. It was a band of the Border Regiment. And it was marvellous. It was the first time, of course, we'd ever marched behind a band. And we marched round and round the square, and it was a great day. A lot of work went into getting all your kit shiny the night before, and we thought we were so smart, you know, immaculate we were in our own minds, and we passed out, and then we were told to go where we were going, and I was going to the cavalry, and when I got to the cavalry they told me how scruffy I was, you know, but we thought at Carlisle we were so smart, but we realised we went they wouldn't let us out of camp for 3 weeks until we were looking something like a horse soldier.
And you were talking about the various rivalries of the sections or what have you. Was there a prize on the passing out parade for the smartest group? Was anything of that nature?
I don't know whether... I can't remember now whether there was something for the top soldier. I can't remember that there was such a thing as... There might have been at Sandhurst, where you got the sword and all that, but I don't think there was any swords given out at Carlisle. You were just glad to get through it, to get through without getting checked.
Your sergeant that you mentioned, and your corporals, and that, had they seen any action at all?
I think that they were both at Dunkirk. They'd both been at Dunkirk. This of course, was the nucleus of the lads that got back from Dunkirk, that without a nucleus you can't carry on. So they were instrumental in turning out a new flock.
Did they talk about their experiences to you?
Yes, I remember Sergeant Payne saying when we were in training, I remember us being in a field where some of the regular boarders were in this field. We couldn't see them. They were all in the dead ground. And we said, now in this field, there's a lot of soldiers. And we looked if he wasn't right. And we said, and he would lift his hand up and some people would stand up. And we were amazed that they weren't too far away, but we hadn't seen them. And this was how we learned camouflage and things like that. And he was telling us about his experience in France. You had to be, it would save your life if you could do this sort of thing.
And that didn't make you nervous?
No, I don't think so. I don't think anyone was nervous about going into action. That's all we live for, really. That's what we're getting ready for.